You are listening to Something Rather Than Nothing. Creator and host, Ken Vellante. Editor and producer, Peter Bauer.
This is Ken Vellante, host of Something Rather Than Nothing, with episode 17, starring Prudence Flint. Prudence is an Australian artist and a brilliant thinker, a brilliant artist, and just creates a fascinating world with her paintings. I hope you'll check out her paintings either before or during or after this episode. They're quite brilliant and won many awards in her home country of Australia. She's being recognized more internationally with her first international show in Dublin, and also some recent exposure on magazines such as High Fructose, and most recently in Juxtapose, Winter 2020 issue. I wanted to mention a few thanks for your support for the podcast, which actually just passed 1,000 downloads. And as you know, is available on Spotify, iTunes, and on its source, Podbean. I've received a lot of nice comments and feedback from folks. Always feel free to contact the show. The easiest way to do that would be at my personal email, which is Ken Vellante, K-E-N, V as in Victor, O-L-A-N-T-E, KenVellante at iCloud.com. And appreciate any comments you have or any ideas for future guests that you think would be great. I've had such incredible guests. Again, this is episode 17 since debuting this show in July, and have some incredible guests upcoming, including Gerald Roulette, who's a Portland, Oregon artist, just an incredible artist, unveiled a new portrait of Jesus in over at Concordia University. And there's also a former NFL player and a lifelong artist since an early age. So that should be an episode that'll be coming up very soon, including another episode with Jack Kent, who is a Portland sketch artist and is somewhat known for his Sketchy People series, where he depicts the, the strangeness that is Portland, Oregon, and some of the folks he meets there. He sketches them out and lists their location. And anyways, looking forward to a great conversation with him. Again, want to thank you for all your support for the podcast. And now we have the incredible, gifted, and fascinating Prudence Flint.
We're separated by a lot of time zones, and yep. I sent you the link to the podcast, but you know, it tends to be pretty comfortable. It tends to be rather fun, a chance to answer or try to stab at these some of these questions. But from the outside looking in, do you have any just drop them out questions or anything?
So with your podcast, so you interview all kinds of people. It isn't just artists. So that was my question.
Yeah. So one of the things that's interesting is it's developed is like what type of podcast it is. I mean, first and foremost, I want to ask like conceptual philosophical questions of artists or those who create.
Yes.
And these are the type of questions I think sometimes you're not asked, or maybe not in this way.
Yeah, sure.
So my net remains, it ends up being pretty darn large, because my interests go that way. And some less, I would say creators actually might even be more accurate now that you mention that.
That sounds good. Yes.
Yeah, because there's some, some political stuff I have in there. These things like, I think of things like organizing or cooking or like these kind of creative acts and just so with a net that large, you know.
It looked interesting. Looked really interesting. So and I like the questions. I really like the questions that you asked. So I did write a few little notes this morning about how I'd answer your questions.
I'll get into it. I want to ask a little bit more into a couple of your interests in some of the things that you read and also your process with journaling and, you know, how that.
I've journaled, I'm 57 and I've been journaling since I was about 20 or 19. So I've got about I'm on my 134th book. I write all the time. So it's I don't even know what it is. I don't even call it anything. I just write. I'll write in all kinds of ways. I'm interested in fiction writing. So I just, but I kind of feel like I'd need another life to write literature, but I feel that I just write anyway. I need to write. And I find that I draw and write, and it's all very connected for me. And
Prudence, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I mean, I was very interested in hear what you had to say about, you know, about the amount that you read in your writing. And
yes,
you know, for me, just looking at the two activities, they seem rather disparate, right? I mean,
really,
you know, how do you
writing? You mean writing and painting?
Yeah, yeah.
But they conjure worlds. So
okay,
tell
me about that. Tell me about that.
Well, I think when I read, it's very visual. I imagine the people, I imagine the places. It's fluid. I move around emotionally, and I find painting is very much the same. It's for me, it's a narrative. I create a space and a psychological space, and I come up with an idea, and I don't see it as so different. For me, it's quite connected.
Yeah, and let me tell you the reason why I said that, the reason why I think that. Just started painting myself a couple years ago. And one of the things I realized was very much in what you just said. I recognized it as language. And there was no way what I was experiencing at that time that I needed the process and I wasn't writing it. And it created this whole pathway, which it really transformed me and just kind of blew my mind. But I think it's the way I had built them up so much time over so much time.
You mean like, the painting? You're talking about the paintings. Yes.
Yeah. About what that is and how it seems like. And your description about that process and what you're doing is born by, you know, decades of doing both.
Yeah.
And do you see them as so you see them as maybe very similar type of processes for you?
Same but different. You know, they're different. They're different languages, but it's like, you know, Italian and German maybe. And but one is very tactile and one is more internal and kind of in your imaginary zone. And painting is more hands-on and physical. It's the physicality of it I love. I kind of think of it like cooking. It's like cooking a book. cook it. You have to make it like a recipe that's how I see it. But I see it all connected in a lovely way. Imaginative worlds.
And, you know, the type of writer that you are ends up being influenced by, you know, another activity that I've read you mention as far as things that take up your time and help, you develop yourself is is reading. So what about who are your top authors as far as that influenced you? Yeah.
Oh, there's so many. I mean, some years I'll go through the classics. I read, you know, all the Charles Dickens and Proust and, you know, I go back through history and read, you know, Jane Austen and the Bronte sisters and then more contemporary writers. I'll read a lot of contemporary writers. I'm not going to be able to think of any of them now, but I'll read everything. I read crime. I read science fiction. I read a lot. I read theory. I should go to my bookshelf, shouldn't I? Murakami. I love all kinds of books. Alina Ferrante, I loved all that series. Does that give you some?
That does. So let's go back to childhood. I think another interview I heard that you were the youngest family.
Yes.
And
I had three older brothers,
which will definitely create an influence altogether.
That puts you in a spot, doesn't it? It really, like, I was the last one and I was the girl, and there was like 4 years difference between all of us. So I had quite old, you know, they were quite older brothers, and I'm kind of closest to my brother, who's the nearest in age to me. And yeah, and I think I had to definitely fight for my place in the family in a way, because they were a force unto themselves and very competitive family. And so I think my femaleness was a real – I survived. Not, you know, some other person might have done another thing, but I think my femaleness became quite a – interest of mine, and I think that's what's happened with my work, in that I think I'm still investigating that in my work, and I'm interested in that when I read fiction. I think I'm very interested in gender and how it defines you socially and through history, how it influences how you exist in the world.
And prior to you know, painting and doing and teaching and some other things you've done in your life, I understand that you did have some time working within fashion. Could you tell us about that?
I did a degree in design, and I did do a few freelance jobs once I left school, but I pretty quickly realized I was very dreamy and really wanted to do my own work. And I started to see, I started to look at art. And so I kind of went back to school and went and did fine art and started painting. So, and then I started painting women and it kind of went from there. Yeah, that's a very abbreviated version.
When I first saw your paintings, and I think I might have seen them in a spread that was in High Fructose magazine a little bit back. I mean, I was just floored. I thought they were absolutely gorgeous and incredible. One of the thoughts that was in my head was I saw an element of fashion and neatness within the cuts that said, I was not surprised when I heard that about you. And I wanted to tell you I know you're getting more, you know, attention, you know, as an Australian artist, but more attention in Europe and maybe some more recent exposure in the United States. But I share, you know, some of your work with my friends and kind of in the reaction to each person was very similar to mine. They're just, it seems so, so wildly different and fascinating that people just have this very similar reaction to.
Oh, that's lovely.
to your work. And it has a piece where and I've used it to describe some other art in the past. It's a strange thing to say, where there's this, you know, intense familiarity, but also this incredible amount of space between, say, myself looking at it and and what it is. And it's like those two aspects.
So that you're saying there's familiarity,
yeah,
but also and also something foreign to you. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, very foreign, very like, it's like a space, like I'm peering into, or a universe where you're like, well, how was this created? Like, it just really prompts.
So you actually relate to it, but you don't as well? Is that what you mean?
I very much relate to it, but don't understand it in a way that I would like to. At least yet.
Okay. That's really nice. I like that. Yeah, I don't know whether I understand it either.
Well,
that depends what you mean by that. That you don't understand it, in that you want to know where the ideas come from, or you want to know the story behind the ideas. Is that what you mean by not understanding?
Well, let me try it this way. This might be inexact. Part of it, what I was thinking is that you've described your works, which seem to me just crisp, just right, and perfect, as having a very kind of, there's an aspect of incompletion, or that they're not finished for you, or you're never quite done with them. It seems like you kind of let them go at the time that seems right. And for me, I wonder how that is, and that's part of like me conceptually looking at them. Mm.
I suppose I let them go when something's not annoying me too much. Like, there's a point where, you know, I'll be working on them and it's like music out of tune, and until I get it in tune, I won't be finished with it. So I will work on them for about 3 months. And I'll keep tweaking the colors, and, you know, I'll move things until it all feels like it's sitting as a whole. And there'll still be things about it, but until I can sit with it and kind of feel this calm feeling that it captures, it holds itself, I won't let go until I get that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And one of the biggest challenges and questions I didn't have written down for you, but I'm going to take a stab at.
Yeah,
I've discovered on the podcast, it's easier to, you know, play a music track, right? And then the music's going to be right in front of you and hear the sounds. And of course, with painting, you know, sometimes you feel like, I feel like I'm stumbling out of the block, you know, describing a painting. But what I would say basically about the painting in your recent pieces is that there are women subjects predominantly, that there are various very neat and perfect geometric shapes and shadow interplay and light interplay. There is a kind of you know, a mundane activity. There's a bit of disproportionality, where things seem a little bit bigger or smaller than you would expect them to be. Now, for everybody's listening to podcasts, the point is just go search for the images. But I always try to take a stab when we're talking about painters about what's going on there.
Described them very, very beautifully.
Oh my gosh. All right. Well, I was going to write it out. I'm glad I just tried to work it out.
That's beautiful. And I love the way you say the disproportionate parts of, because they just happen when I don't do things deliberately. It's more just that, but I love it when I get a body to sit how I want it to sit. And it's, it becomes it's like a body sitting in the space. So that all happens in the process of the painting. It's not, I don't design it like that. It just kind of happens. Usually they start out quite in proportion, in the, I suppose, if you want to say that at the beginning sometimes, and then they get out of proportion or whatever. But I feel like they the out of proportion is a kind of psychological proportion. So
yeah,
because if I did kind of photograph, well, actually photographs distort, emotion distorts. I don't feel like we ever have a so-called accurate sense of ourselves. So if I want to embody a figure in a painting, it, for me, it always has to be, have its own sense of proportion. It's not about a, you know, like if you measured it all up in a scientific way, it wouldn't, that wouldn't make sense to me.
Well, speaking of proportion, I was surprised, and then it made perfect sense to me of some of your interest in some of classical painting.
Yes.
And kind of, you know, typical, you know, religious, well, typical, yes. so to speak, religious subjects.
Yes.
And
yes.
I heard a bit of audio. And just you describing about that. Can you tell us about your interest in that and what, whether you see an overt connection to your work that you do?
Well, I love, when I travel, I love going and seeing early Renaissance paintings, just because they're so incredibly intense, and I love all the religious narratives, because they're never, you know, there's such a scope, even though the story stays similar, but I just find them incredibly heart-wrenching and about humanity and pain and pleasure and humorous, and I just love the limitation of painting, in that, you know, you actually have this, when you go and see these paintings that were done quite a long time ago, and you see the artist's hand, you know, you see the paint, and I just can't, nothing beats it for me. I could just, it's always the highlight of my travels. And even tiny little paintings, they might be as big as your hand or two hands. And I just find it amazingly emotional when I go and see these amazing little paintings. And yeah, they're like little windows into the past that are really precious. And
yeah, there's some beautiful pieces, and I think there's a lot of just hearing some of your description before about those on another podcast.
It was
about a 5-minute piece about a particular piece.
At the Met. Yeah, I love Hans Memling, and he's one of my favorites. We've got a beautiful one in the NGV here in Melbourne. And they really inspire me. They kind of, if I could do anything that was even slightly as powerful, I would. Yeah, that's what I find. I can go and see the paintings, and it just will remind me of the power of it. So yeah.
Is that why, one of my questions for you is why you create? Is that why you create?
I think, yeah, why I create. I think I've always, ever since I was little, I think I've always needed to do something. I'm not somebody who can, I think it's a certain kind of suffering that makes you create. I don't mean that in a dramatic way, but I've never been able to just kind of sit back and not do something. I feel like I get a lot of joy from looking at pictures and from stories. So I suppose that I need to engage in that too. I suppose it's a way to, it's an existential dilemma. I have to do that to feel like my life is okay, or I to stop anxiety, general anxiety about living. It somehow makes living make sense to me. because I will have a, like this year, I've had a very dramatic year. And my paintings, I can sit back and I can see that I've done quite a bit of work this year. And I find it very consoling that I can somehow still make work from that. And I, and it will feed my work, and somehow it makes me think I'm, there's a part of me that is watching everything that's happening, and there's a remove, and it's a peaceful place. It's so when I go into my studio, it's a peaceful kind of power. I'm empowered because there's a detachment and that I don't probably have in other parts of my life. And so that's why I do it.
Well, and in the face of difficulty, being able to have that experience is quite the blessing. I'm happy for
you. Yeah, and difficulty is inevitable in life. Like, it's because, you know, life is, there's always loss going on, and you know, life, that's what life is. And you have to console yourself somehow. I'm making it sound pretty dramatic, aren't I, life? But it's just, I actually think it is pretty tricky living your life and how to make sense of it and come to grips with loss. So, yeah, I'll explain what's happened this year, because I was in a relationship for 31 years and it finished in January. So this year is my first year since, you know, most of my adult life I've been in a conjugal relationship. So this year is the first year. You know, I'm adjusting to huge change. So, yeah, my painting is very consoling at the moment. It's kind of a place I can go, and it's a separate place that I've always had, and I don't have to, it's a familiar place that I'm in control of, and that's a massive change.
Were you ever fearful that you might not want to go do that, or wouldn't it provide you what you need? I mean, was there must have been a lot of fears that you were going on.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's all right. I mean, life is okay. You know, it's all security wise, everything is fine, and I'm very fortunate like that. But I, you know, just emotionally, there's a lot of adjusting going on and a lot of processing going on, which is totally preoccupying. And I'm watching myself, how I cope, because I know some people may get more depressive, and I'm probably watching myself get more, I get a bit more obsessive and impulsive, and that's what I've had to manage this year. I'm much more obsessive thoughts, and I've had trouble reading and watching films, because it's as if my brain is preoccupied with processing all this new information. It's kind of like I've got to find a new way to live with myself and the world. So it's been a huge project.
Possibly the paralysis, you know, of freedoms or different types of freedoms.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's an amazing statement. Yes. Yeah. It's like
for a little while sometimes.
You don't what?
You don't move for a little while sometimes when you're like, okay, which direction? I can go in any direction, or, you know, it's quite jarring.
Yes. Oh, freedom, you know, whatever that means. But it's, it's taking up a lot of my, it's like I've got to just go through it. I've got to go through the experience of it. And, I went overseas on my own for a month and in Europe and traveled around Europe on my own, and I've traveled a lot, but never on my own. So that was really intense, but I liked it. There's a lot of things that are really good about it. So I'm, it's been a big year.
it certainly sounds like it. So part of that I'm wondering too is, and I'm going to tell everybody, just mention your name again, is we're talking with Prudence Flint, an Australian painter, whose beautiful work is going to be in the new Juxtapose magazine 2020 with a short profile of her. And it's Prudence, that's connected to what I was wondering. So you've won, you know, quite a few awards, and you've been recognized in Australia. And I understand that more recently your work's being seen in, I believe, in Ireland, and
yes.
It's becoming, you know, more international with some exposure in the United States. Can you tell us, you know, most listeners being in the United States, can you tell us what that experience has been for you and what you think people are noticing, what changes there are for you in that type of attention?
Okay. Well, it doesn't change a lot of things for me because, you know, I'm still working in the same room that I was working in for 20 years. I'm still in this little room working away on my painting. So that never changes, but I suppose I have, it was really good to go overseas and, get my work out of Australia. Cause I think the main thing is that, figurative work in Melbourne probably has a bit of a limited kind of, it doesn't necessarily get supported by institutions here or given the same kind of opportunities. So getting my work out of Melbourne was really great because I think it gets seen with fresh eyes outside of Australia. And it was hung in such a beautiful space in Dublin in this gallery called Mother's Tank Station, and with just had a beautiful big skylight, so it was all sky lit, and it just looked beautiful, and it was really great. Whereas figurative art is probably given a bit of a B grade situation in Melbourne for some reason. It's hard for me to explain why, because I live here, so it's hard to see it from a distance. But I know that figurative work probably has more of a lineage outside of Australia. English, you know, Lucian Freud, there's a whole kind of history of figuration that gives that a certain kind of ground for work to be seen in a bit of more powerful way. So yeah, does that answer your question?
Yeah, it absolutely does.
Yeah.
One of the things I wanted to ask you is, it's just, you know, not to be overt about it, but it's the women in your paintings, and the role of women is just so important and prominent in your work. Mm. And I know in, you know, the fashion industry where you worked in, and in other interviews, you relayed some of the expectations upon you as a woman. You know, that's obviously such a big part of your experience. I've done interviews working with another artist, Megan McRorty, with female politicians who are running for office in the United States. And
yes,
it was interesting, the questions she had developed that were just, you know, what's it like not to have to answer a policy issue question, but a question about the color of your dress, and, you know, you know, what was going on with your hair today, or not being, you know, that women have to be encouraged to run for office, you know, basically about 10, 11 times to a man's one. You know, where does that come from? And that dynamic, with those type of things in mind, and, you know, how options might have been limited to you, or doors were closed.
Mm-hmm.
How has all that been part of your experience and informed your art?
Well, oh, that's huge. Okay. Probably it's a bit like sinking or swimming. I kind of feel like I've made it work for me. I've made it work for me now, but probably for a long time I had to kind of drown and drown in the disability of it or something. Because I suppose that's what was my interest. I was interested in the disadvantage of being a woman and as a painter, you're very much in a male tradition. Even if you're as skilled and talented, I suppose the voice, where you come from with your voice in regard to creating meaning, it's loaded because you have a different, you come from a different place from historically, you're the object that was painted. And so if I didn't drown and I start to use it, and I suppose, and I start to not see it as a limitation and actually see it as an advantage, because it was interesting. I had this gallery director come to my studio the other day, and he said to me with a smile on his face, he said, "Well, you can get away with things that I wouldn't be able to get away with." And I love that, because I actually feel like as I've got older, I kind of, I'm not so worried about being politically correct anymore, because I figure that I've lived my life, and I feel like I have earned my truth, and it's like my territory. I'll go there, and I'm curious how far I can go and open it all up and even feel like it's dangerous. I love that feeling. And I think that's a really healthy feeling. And but I feel like I've had to really live it and earn it over the years. I think when I was younger, I suppose, yeah, I feel like my painting has had to come from my life and living my life. And I feel like I have to keep living my life well, and then I will feed my painting. And as a woman, I have to live my life well. And yeah, and then my painting will reflect that as a woman. And when you talk about women politicians, I think, oh boy, because I feel like when I watch women politicians, they are up there against, I feel like they're up against so much. I think that it's like the extreme, isn't it? It's like extreme. They're in this world that is really against culturally how gender works, and then it's like they're in the wrong box. They're in the wrong place. But I love it. I love watching women deal with it and how they deal with it, and it's very, and I find it funny when people say, oh, she's a strong woman, and I think, who isn't? What does that mean? It's, you know, I don't like it when, you know, we think that when a woman is phallic that she's strong. And I like to question that one, because I think that just feeds into, you know, that strength is the phallic thing, the suit and the, you sure. know, the spit. Yeah. Yeah. And I always like to feel like I don't want to do that. I feel like I don't know. I think I'm just judging women then, just like the social world does, and puts women in a certain corner. And I think women have I know men do too, but it's kind of like gender. We put each other in a corner, and, you know, you've got to kind of stay there. And I like it when it crosses over and it gets all kind of blurry. And I think that's much more real.
It was obviously a really big question. And I see a lot of, I mean, I picked up on some of the words you had to say, and just strength. I see your paintings being just incredibly strong, and the other piece, and the figures in your painting being incredibly strong. The other piece I was picking up on, you know, connected to freedom, and, you know, you feeling that there's, you know, you keep trying to get away with things. And I was thinking of the answer to the question, what is art, by Andy Warhol, is art is what you can get away with, right?
Yes.
So like getting getting away with things. Crossing
thresholds somehow.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Well, so tell me, tell me what is art? What is art?
Mm. Yeah, well, that's a really general question. Yeah, I don't know. I think it can, well, I feel like it's a mirror. It's for me, I mean, maybe it's for other people it would be something else, but
sure.
For me, I want a mirror. So I look into, and that's my interest in a painting. I suppose it's, I want to look into a space, and I want to go, oh, I know that feeling. And I think that's what I love. I get a lot of joy when I can recognize something that I know that it's a feeling or a place or a, and the same with fiction reading when I recognize something and I, yeah, that's art to me. It's a mirror. It mirrors us back, our aliveness.
Is that part of the reason why you stay with your paintings as long as you do? I mean, I found that to be...
You mean 3 months when I actually stay with them to work on them?
Yeah, you mentioned it seemed like when they were placed in a different location that you had kind of been, you know, near them for an amount of time or had, you know, that relationship with the paintings themselves, and then they were, you know, displaced someone. I just heard in your answer, I mean, is that part of why you think you do that, or is it, you ever think
when I have to let go of them and then I have to create new ones?
Yeah,
I feel like, yeah, because life's constantly changing and shifting and I have new ideas and there'll be something that's quite, you know, it's kind of like dreams, you know, you dream certain dreams that are repetitive. Well, I get repetitive dreams for years and then they'll suddenly stop, that repetition will stop and there'll be a new kind of dream. I see the correlation with my painting. I will work on a series and then I'll kind of come to the end of that series and it'll be reflective of what I'm struggling with in my life, or it'll be kind of mirroring some unconscious space I'm inhabiting, and so I work on a painting for 3 months because it takes 3 months to build up. It's actually just a practical thing to build for me, to build up the surface and get everything working and all tonally and color temperature working. It takes that long to just get it, tweak it all into tune. So that's why I work on them for that long. Yeah.
I've heard you talk before about the impact, or it seems to be a sensitivity you have that I can see of with light and shadow or sunlight, and it's in,
yes.
and showing up in the shadows or through the windows.
Yes.
With
no, I love light.
Is that
like
part
light.
Of, do you think that's part of a reflection of, you know, where you are? I mean, like I was recording here from Oregon and it's going to be like largely cloudy and light rain until for another four months. So
wow.
Your description of this.
I know, because I don't think I could live in Europe because I don't, Northern Europe, because I just don't think I could stand the weather. I know Australia, I mean, Melbourne, we do get a winter, but it's probably about 4 months of kind of, but, you know, we still have sunny days and then we get mostly sunny weather. And I live upstairs and I get a lot of light and I love it. I really like light, and I find that my paintings, I need daylight to paint them by. I cannot paint by natural light. I've just found I would probably, if I had to, I would, but they'd be different paintings. They'd probably change to get everything working, color temperature, tone, I need to work in the natural light. So so there's a few months in the middle of the year, like June and July, that I'm actually cursing the clouds because they come over and I can't see what I'm doing. And I actually do. I shake my hand at the clouds because it's like, I can't see what I'm doing now. And, and I can do certain aspects of my pictures. I can draw and do some things, but I can't do the part that I love the best, which is when I get the painting working and I'm just tweaking it. And I tweak it for, probably a month. I'll tweak little bits until it all just comes together. And that's my favorite bit of the work. And when I've got the painting, basically, and I'm just tuning it. And, I really need good light. So I've just got a bedroom that I work in, and it's got northern light. And so this time of the year is great. And so I know I've got January, February, March, April, May. May gets a bit iffy. June, July, bleh. Yeah, so I do most of my work over this time of the year. Yeah.
So this is a busy period. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad I'm slightly envious to hear you talk about that, son. But I can look at pictures for a little while and, photographs.
Yeah,
yeah. one of the things, the title of the podcast is Something Rather Than Nothing, and there's this large philosophical question, which is, why is there something rather than nothing? And artists and thinkers, like yourself, that's the question we pose to you, and you can relate it to a work of art or why there's art or anything. But the question is,
I have an answer because it. When you asked that, I read that question and I thought it's because of abundance. I have an abundance of feelings, and I feel like life. I'm constantly overstimulated by life. So I need for that to go somewhere. So creating art is the perfect place for that to go. So that's my answer to that question, that I feel like, what do you do with what all your feelings? What do you do? I feel like I've always had an abundance of feelings. I've always feel like I've needed to do something with my feelings. And confusing feelings. It's not simple. It's not and the journaling feeds into that too. I feel like I've always needed to process my feelings and thoughts and ideas and
I find your answer fascinating for me personally, and here's why. I think for myself, I would never have thought of answering that question regarding feelings. Everything you said made eminent sense to me, but without hearing that, I've never thought of it in that context. And I think I really, really need to. And I was also thinking about your journaling because I get really, really fascinated by people who are creating, people who are feeling things maybe more intensely or questioning life, and like, how do you process where you are, whether it's conceptually or with your feelings, and how do you move and how do you get through that? And so I really appreciate your answer because it's almost like just answering it anew. So it's really for you a lot of the proof of that you're experiencing these feelings and then trying to do something with them.
Yes, something with them. I watch myself sometimes. I will have an intense experience. It can be all kinds of things. And sometimes I won't even know I'm having an intense experience. It will creep up on me. It doesn't mean, it might be just watching TV one day, or it doesn't have to be, something dramatic. But it will be some shift or something's moving, and then an idea comes, and then it's very exciting because I'll get an idea, and then I start seeing a painting, and I draw it up, and I it's like channeling, and then it's a great joyful experience, it's like I get to put it somewhere, and it might be a kind of something building up in me, like a kind of a a layering of feelings, and then when I have somewhere to put it, and I put it in a painting, there'll be an idea that will contain it, somehow embody it, and then I love that I have somewhere to put it, and it's kind of a humorous thing I do with myself. It's kind of a joyful feeling, like I it's like a joke I have with myself, like how kind of. It's almost like how crass I can be, or how kind of, no, at times I kind of think how obvious, I feel like I'm being really obvious and kind of almost kind of, I want to see it plain and be as kind of out, just kind of plain about it. And, but it's never plain, that, because I find when I start painting it, the depth of it starts to reveal itself, and then I start to look at it and think, ah, so there's connections with this and the past and my mother, and then I start to see all the layers of it, and that's very consoling, because I think that, you know, you kind of realize that that's what you're doing all the time in your life. Everything's connected. It's always kind of ricocheting from back and forth, and, you know, connecting, and that's how our kind of psychology works, I think.
Yeah, I was in hearing your answers and thinking about both the processes of writing and painting. I wanted to mention one comment, which kind of one thought I had that confounded me when I started painting was, and it was, it has this aura of negativity to me, but what I said to myself was, you started painting because you're too afraid to write right now.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like so aggressive. It was so aggressive towards myself.
Yeah.
And,
wow.
And it was prior to me realizing what I was trying to do was to talk, was to with painting, was to talk, was to yell, was to show, was to process, was, you know, all those feelings, all those things going on. But it was almost like the one way I had tried or had not tried over time with not writing enough. It was like a self-criticism of being like, you're taking the easy way out, as if painting's easy, which of course
it's. Yeah, yeah.
So,
yes.
Very intricate psychology. And that's why I've been quite interested in your relationship with, you know, both the writing process and painting. I love asking these questions, but I also have a question too, as far as if you wanted to hear like somebody that, you know, an artist or creator, you know, answer these type of questions, who would that be, or who would they be?
Like another artist?
Yeah. Like just these type of questions.
There's an artist, Jocelyn Hobby. I think she's in New York, and, I would love to hear what she'd say. I love her work. He paints women as well. Does that is that what you mean? Like,
that's exactly. It's, you know, like this, I love doing the podcast. There's this whole element where you might hear it as far as how I interact is like, I'm trying to really learn or in
well, I've heard her talk as well. Yeah. She's got it on her website. There's a lecture she's given at a university, and she's really interesting. And I think I love listening to what she said and how she talked about her work. And so I related to that a lot. And so I'd love to hear her talk again. Yeah.
Oh, and thank you for that. Prudence, part of this is just at the end here is just kind of open-ended, where you can just kind of like let us know, you know, what you're doing or where people can find your work. I had mentioned the new Juxtapose magazine with the nice profile and depiction of your work and nice interview. And you've been in High Fructose magazine and but. You know, other ways or in general, like how people can interact with the work that you do, your art.
Well, I have an Instagram account, and I put up a lot of studio shots and work in progress. So if people are interested to see how the work gets done, because I will put things up before they're finished, and so that can be interesting for people. Yeah. So, and I have a website which has my, all comprehensive, you know, looking back over the, all my work over right from a really pretty early on. So, yeah.
Anything else?
Well, and also there's the galleries that I'm with. They have, but they're more, you know, they will show work that's available for sale, and so it's not necessarily a comprehensive look at the work. But yeah. No, that's all. Yeah, I'm going to be having a show next year in the mid-year in Sydney, next in a, at a gallery called Fine Arts Sydney, and so I'm just finishing. I'll be showing 5 paintings because I probably produce 5 paintings a year. So that's my next show, and that will be in mid-year. So a good time for me to have a show, because it's when winter means that I won't be able to do my work. So it's a good time to have a show, yeah.
Do the other component of, you know, what
to being an artist. So I'll probably go up to Sydney and have a bit of a break, and it'll be good.
And I wanted to thank you, Prudence, and in your busy schedule, and just want to tell you what a joy and an honor it's been to have you on the podcast. I really enjoy your work, and I don't find myself always getting into the biography or the kind of like all the processes of all artists, but I was just really intrigued by a lot of things that I saw that you were doing, and just really beautiful work. So I really appreciate
taking
the time. And the United States tends to be a place of bombast, so I'm going to say the entire country the entire country loves you as well, right? It's the bombast that we work with, so everybody here loves you.
Very good. Well, no, thank you. And I have loved all your questions. And it's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Prudence. Take care.
You are listening to Something Rather Than Nothing.
And this is my thank you list. This is from me, Ken, host of Something Rather Than Nothing. Deep thanks, as always, to Peter Bauer, who produces and edits this show from the first episode to the present. He does an incredible job and spends a lot of time helping make this sound, the show sound great, helping me sound great. There's only so much, you can expect him to do, but great work, Peter. Thanks to Meg Krugel, did the design work for Something Rather Than Nothing. Jacob Rivas, who helps consult on the program. Kim Reed, who's helped with booking. And also, there's some folks I send this program to prior to it going out of the air. And they listen to it. And they always tell me it's great. And so then it ends up, on the air. So they're secret people that I send it to. So thanks to them for listening to it. It's very difficult for me to keep listening to my voice, and I just want to kind of crack jokes during some of these episodes, but I'm going to ask some of the serious questions too. Thanks for everybody who is making this show possible. It's taken a lot of hours of shockingly unpaid labor to them, which is a shocking issue for a union rep, but I'll deal with that existential or ethical knot maybe in a later episode. Thanks, folks.